Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to this Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. In this winter election, campaigners have had the tough job of going out in the dark and the cold to get their messages across. But their campaign is as much fought on the internet as it is on the ground. Viral videos are capable of reaching tens of millions of internet users, whereas much fewer tune in to traditional broadcasts. So how important is the digital battleground, and what makes for an online victory? I'm Cindy Yu, and I'm joined by Katie Balls, who writes about the issue in this week's Spectator, and James Ball, journalist and author of Post Truth. Katie, can you tell us about this digital battleground?
Ultimately, in this election, there are different conversations going on in different places. Now, there's the one that you see on the news if you're watching the news bulletins, the 6 and the 10, which is tends to be, I suppose, the policy announcements that each party is putting out there, then balanced with a response from another party saying why they think it's rubbish. There's also on the doorstep MPs going out and campaigning on the doors. But what I say in the magazine is one growing battleground, which has been increasing importance for every election, is digital. And on digital, there are different rules when it comes to elections. It's harder to regulate. It's harder to keep a track of even what is going on. And increasingly, it's where a lot of, I suppose, younger voters especially are getting their information from. And if you look at the various, you know, videos, so one thing I say in the piece is, you would think, and this is, we're recording this on a Friday, but it's going out on a Saturday. So you would think that Friday night, so tonight's head-to-head leaders debate, the final one, could have the most watched moment of the election. Or perhaps the ITV head-to-head debate we've already had. But actually, if you start to look, there are now all these video clips going out, being shared online, which rack up a much higher, in theory, rate of watch than what you would see on primetime TV. So it's a different way to access audiences. Now, some of this can be described as fake news, to borrow a phrase. If you think, for example, earlier in the campaign, we had to have Jo Swinson intervene to say that she didn't like to shoot squirrels. And that was because there was a spoof online article masquerading, which had been shared a lot on social media. Now, that on the surface seems fairly funny. I don't think that some would think it was the most serious smear, but it does give you a taste of how it's actually a lot harder to police what's going on. And in 2017, the Tories were definitely on the back foot on social media and on the online footprint, and Labour ahead. I think that if you look just on what videos, I suppose, are the most shared videos in terms of the selection, the one that I talk about in the piece is Rob Delaney, the catastrophe actor, having a video talking about NHS privatisation. Now, I think that some of the claims in that video would probably not meet Ofcom rules. It hasn't been broadcast on the BBC. Ultimately, he's talking about how the NHS is at risk, something lots of people say is the case. But he, you know, you could say it's a joke, but he makes claims such as, you know, Donald Trump's going to give it to Ivanka and the rest of his kids, and they're going to divvy it up. And it's reached over 10 million views on social media. You've also had, I think, you start to see where, I think in the olden days, you would have a situation where a minister might go on television and have an absolute car crash performance. And it would be awful for a couple of days, but it would probably die. There's no longer, I think, that end point on disastrous television appearances. So Nicky Morgan being interviewed on Nurse Numbers on Good Morning Britain is climbing up and could be one of the most watched. I think it's been watched 8 million times on Facebook since that happened. And that's basically coming unstuck on this idea that the Tories are saying 50,000 when in reality it's more like 30,000. And I think it's stories like that, which I don't think, if you're not online, if you're just watching the television or reading the papers, I don't think you get such a sense of what is getting the most interaction with this other audience.
James, let's take this Robert Delaney video where he claims that Trump is out to get the NHS and Ivanka Trump is lining up and all this sort of stuff. I mean, it's peddling on this fear of the NHS being sold off, being privatised, especially to America in a trade deal. Not necessarily rooted in fact. What happens to truth in this sort of digital campaigning age where things like this can be peddled and shared before any fact-checkers come along?
I mean, truth really has no place if we're talking about anything going viral. We should stress this is sometimes often done with very good motivations. Rob Delaney lost a child and so has very strong reasons to care a very great deal about the NHS. You wouldn't want to sort of impugn any malign motive on him. But what would it even mean to sell the NHS? Well, you know, what's the idea that it's on the table? It all sounds very sinister when you're saying sell the NHS. You know, I'm of the left, but I am aware that the Conservatives have run the NHS for 44 of its 73 years and not noticeably sold it. And if we're going to say that's because Thatcher was a radical left-wing pro-state person, it doesn't wash. Now, have they underinvested in it? Absolutely. Certainly compared to Labour, there's good evidence of that. There is very good evidence the NHS would be at risk of paying much higher drug prices, which could very severely harm it. So what happens is there's a slightly true but nuanced story that doesn't involve a bunch of Tories in top hats cackling and clinking glasses of port as they sign
Jacob
the deal
Rees-Mogg is in
to,
the closet at the moment.
You know, sell Basingstoke Hospital to KPMG or something. It's there's something in between that, but that's not what goes viral. Going, hey, hang on, here's what this party actually says, here's what this one does, is a great way to get three views. And so the very tricky thing is, when what fuels you is anger or is righteousness or is all this sort of stuff, you end up with every side screaming at each other and every side getting huge numbers and really not being open for any nuance. And so we have one of the stupidest rows of the entire thing today in Channel 4 putting out a fairly bland clip of Johnson actually playing the liberal, of saying things that the left and liberals would like that are possible thanks to Brexit. And he lists ending the tampon tax, you know, VAT on tampons, stopping live exports of animals. You know, these are good sort of nice causes, nice Tory causes. And then the third was sort of equalising immigration so that there's not an automatic thing for people from Europe, and the idea being people of talent come from everywhere. That is the logical third thing in a nice sequence. Channel 4 captioned it people of colour. Now, they put the video out with a very bland caption. They weren't attempting a gotcha. This was not some attempt by a liberal broadcaster to get him. But as soon as it was spotted and people thinking it was people of colour, it did come across as racist. And of course, there is a reason people suspect Boris Johnson of racism, and it's because he's written some pretty offensive things. But Channel 4 deleted it, apologised, all quite reasonable, but it suited the Conservatives to flare up anger on their side. And now you've got Labour outriders saying, well, you know, now the media are trying to cover up for Boris Johnson. You know, that was Jeremy Corbyn's former spokesman, Matt Zarb-Cousin. And it relies on assuming that Channel 4 News, which showed a melting ice sculpture in place of Boris Johnson when it empty chaired him, is secretly trying to cover up and help Johnson on racism. It's nonsense, but it gets them the clicks, it gets the traffic. But here's sort of the really fun bit of the illusionary bubble. These view figures themselves are inflated and wrong. You get a view on Twitter, on Facebook, for between 2 to 5 seconds of having more than half the video up on your screen, whether the sound's on or off. So if you're idly scrolling through, you will count as a view on a 3-minute video if it lingers on your screen for more than 2 seconds. And so the numbers are inflated and hyped. The message is inflated and hyped. It's all very big and very angry. And truth gets you nowhere. Truth just gets lost right in the middle of that void.
Yeah.
That was a bit emo, wasn't it?
It's an important issue. Katie, you know, James there mentions this Boris Johnson video. I mean, that's a huge row that's happening as we're recording, because we're recording on a Friday, on Twitter right now. How much is Twitter a bubble? You know, are we as journalists spending too much time online and not... I mean, is anyone out there actually going to care about whether or not this he said talent or colour?
Well, I think people would care what he said. The question is, do they hear that he didn't say it? So I think this is an issue people would care about. But when it comes to how much is Twitter representative of the country, I mean, David Cameron famously said, you know, Twitter is not Britain. And I think that there is still quite a bit of truth in that. Where you have a Twitter storm, it can feel overwhelming. You know, it's lots of concentrated people, but I don't think it's that representative of the country. But I think if we're going to talk about digital campaigning, it's not just about Twitter. This is about lots of different mediums. And where I think it can be really effective is Twitter, I think. And again, I don't have the demographic knowledge here, so I'm using more kind of anecdotal evidence. But I do think Twitter can be a very city-based media type thing. Whereas if I think about Facebook, I think, and particularly how political parties see Facebook, I think Facebook is much more likely to be seen as the effective place you have to get your message out. And we've seen that in previous elections and referendums. So in the EU referendum, Vote Leave's targeted Facebook adverts were seen as pretty critical, actually, to getting their vote out and getting voters to swing, you know, undecidedly voters to go the whole hog. Now, lots of people said their adverts, and that's probably a different discussion, were not appropriate, and they suggested things that weren't true on Turkey and other issues. But you can start to see how targeted adverts can be very effective. And I think that that's often where the focus is on these things. I think that if you look at this general election, online spend is an issue. There is a cap on how much each party can spend in terms of their online adverts. But one thing is, ultimately, the Tories seem to have held back a lot of their budget for the last week of this campaign. And they are planning to go hell for leather in the last week with targeted advertising and all the seats they need. Now, I think that if you look at Labour and the Liberal Democrats, they've been spending it more consistently. So with online digital campaign, you can also start to, I suppose, glean a bit more about where parties are focusing on, because it's all data. So you can start to see the postcodes, you know, in Google when you're tracking these things. So it gives you a good steer, actually, as to the intention of each party. But I think that Twitter is one side of this. I don't think, for example, the Conservatives are particularly worried that on Twitter they are bashed more than not. I think that on social media, one of the things you've seen, the difference between Labour and the Conservatives, is clearly the trick to social media is getting your message shared. Now, you can spend money trying to do that to get your post promoted. That's actually less effective. You are more likely to look at something your friend shares than something which says promoted on the screen. What Labour tend to be better at, partly because they have satellite groups or groups like Momentum who will push their messages, are they're better at getting their videos or just even like their policy announcements organically shared by people, and then that expands and you have a snowball effect. The Tories tend to be quite bad at that in comparison. In this election, they have been trying less conventional means to do that. So you have a situation where they have two New Zealanders who've been brought into CCHQ, and they do seem to work on the mantra, I get a sense from those around them, but, you know, 20% controversy or something that people are going to argue about to do with your post can actually be really a good thing. So they want people to share their message. But, I mean, there was one example of it back before the election started when Boris Johnson was trying to pass his deal, and they were doing banners on the day of the vote in the build-up saying, get Brexit done, and one was in Comic Sans. Now, this led everyone to say, look at this disgusting font by the Conservatives. Another reason I would never support them. I think this is exactly what they had wanted to do, is having a little bit of controversy and then having people quote tweeting it or sharing it on Facebook. Even if it's being critical, people are still seeing get Brexit done. Now, clearly, that's, I think we could all agree, fairly lighthearted. But then you move to a different way of doing that, and we see it during the election campaign. So one of a Keir Starmer video, where it seemed that they had doctored footage to put an extra scene in a Keir Starmer interview, suggests that he was actually dithering to come up with an answer on Labour's Brexit position when he wasn't, which made lots of people quite angry and thought was distorting the truth. And I think most recently, one advert has actually been banned by Facebook because it was deemed the Conservatives were, I think, being misleading on this. I think it was down to intellectual property rights, but this was a BBC-themed video where the Conservatives had clipped Laura Koonsberg, amongst other BBC presenters, basically saying Tory slogans, but cut in a way to suggest that they themselves were supporting it. And again, it was getting shared. So I don't think either party or any of the parties have a moral high ground on their social media game particularly. And that's one of the strange things about where this is all heading, because as James was saying, it's not a particularly nice place online in terms of digital campaigning. And every party has started to adjust to that to get their message out there. But it does mean that you are stretching things.
It's an absolute race to the bottom. But sort of a key thing on this as well is, you know, I think it's quite easy for some people to dismiss a social network they're not on or a climate that they're not on. And yes, Twitter is niche. Twitter tends younger and left wing just because of demographics. Snapchat and TikTok are the youngest ones, then Twitter, And then Facebook, which is by far the largest, skews a lot older and therefore a lot more conservative and a lot more Brexity. And you tend to see memes will travel sort of up that way, but the more left-wing ones tend to die out. But the interesting thing is, online and offline and niche and mainstream now interact in very messy ways. You know, that promoted conservative video to BBC people was very much aiming for hate shares from left-wing people going, it proved that Laura Koonsberg's a Tory, as much as trying to get respectable right-wing people to sort of go, oh, well, if the BBC support the Conservatives, I wonder who ever would say that, to be honest. But, you know, the silly ones show this interaction kind of best. And let's take, you know, noted squirrel murderer Joe Swinson. And that started among a very sort of ultra online, very sarcastic, very layered in irony, sort of quite hard left little group, on mainly on Twitter. And they have a habit of faking screenshots of news stories, very badly photoshopped. They deliberately so. And they sort of fake outrage. And then they quote tweet and amplify each other with their pseudo serious, appalled at what they're reading. And they all know what they're doing, but they know it starts to filter out to a wider group who don't. And then when it hits Facebook, lots of people start getting genuinely angry about it. And the problem is, as journalists, we can't resist the internet. And so they had the perfect situation in this, you know, as Casey noted, where then LBC asks it almost as a joke question. Swinson fluffs the answer completely and denies squirrel murder. You know, what you do there is go, actually, if we're talking about, you know, you laugh and say, yes, I've killed thousands. And then you say, if we're talking about fake news, I am worried about it this election, especially because most of it comes from Number 10. Much better headline. Easy. She didn't do that. And so you then have half tongue in cheek, but one or two mainstream headlines of Joe Swinson denies murdering squirrels. And you've got all the way through there from the nichest of joke posts to actual headlines. And it's subtler on the more serious issues, but it feeds through. And if you don't think this is changing what's on the 6 and on the 10 and how the campaigns react, you are sort of campaigning in 1992 and we're living in 2019.
Katie, I mean, not to be too grand here, I think a lot of listeners who are not journalists listening to this will be a bit worried about, you know, all the disinformation and the misinformation and fake news and all the sort of self-edited videos. Is this damaging for democracy in general? And do voters know how to critically look at what they're consuming?
Well, I think some listeners are probably thinking the general campaigns don't have that much truth in them either.
That's also true.
And it's probably something that's going to come back, and I've seen a bit of. But I guess there's a difference, and you are likely to have, you know, we have a situations where politicians from all different parties have made claims on television, which didn't seem to have too much of a basis in reality. But I think the difference tends to be if you're in a format of broadcast, which is governed by Ofcom, is that you try and balance it. You try and have someone come back on it. And if the presenter misses it in the moment, there might be something like a BBC fact check go out and they try and get it going on social media. Whereas there's almost no reply on a lot of these social media ways of doing it. I mean, I think it is just going to become a part of campaigning. I don't think that there is a way to control digital on a large scale. I think there's clearly some things that parties can do, and we've seen that with Facebook in recent years, and this idea that, you know, pressure to examine this idea that you could have a political video which didn't need to have truth in it, and what their rules are on this. But I think a general good rule is always to read lots of things and watch lots of things, even things you might disagree with. And I think the issue you can sometimes have with social media is it's quite easy to just watch your side. But what I found interesting about the thing we started talking about was that Rob Delaney video, which a lot of it was his, as James said, his emotional experience of the NHS. But if you looked at the figures, it did seem to have quite a lot of cut through with people who weren't traditional, or perhaps not traditional Labour voters, might be the wrong way to put it, but people who had never shared anything from Jeremy Corbyn's page previously. So that suggests that this isn't necessarily just echo chambers, but you almost had to have every party work out how to get in on it, because I don't think one party is going to stop.
James, last word to you. Is there a way of maybe building an Ofcom for digital media?
I mean, I'm not sure we should is the problem. The tricky thing is you very quickly see people start to spiral a little bit when they start talking about controlling this. And so it seems very reasonable to want to control political adverts. But then you have to say, well, what counts as an advert? Is it an advert when I pay for it and when I promote it? What about if I say it for free in my account with quite a lot of followers and it goes viral anyway? So if we say we should control political adverts, we've then got to appoint someone to decide very quickly what you can say during an election paid for. Now, that seems to me that that panel has a lot of power over what the public can see or not. And given that you could circumvent it by then saying it for free, you tend to get people then saying, well, okay, well, maybe just all political speech on social media. So that panel has now decided the limit of your politics. Who appoints it? How? What's the appeal? How quickly is it? What's the sanction? You very quickly start to see that, you know, the whole idea of truth and conduct in election is the voters decide by which party they put in. The tricky thing on this one is that both parties are outrageously lying in ways designed to inflame and infuriate their supporters. And they really, if they don't look at themselves, we have a PM with an approval rating of minus 20 and an opposition leader with an approval rating of minus 44. The public hate this and hate them. And the problem with keeping shouting and winding the public up and saying you should hate people is eventually they start to, and they don't like you very much either. And if they don't sort of look and go, hang on, actually, the way we fix these is norms. The way we fix these is actually reacting to a public revulsed with us. And I don't know if that will be the thing. I don't think either Boris Johnson or Jeremy Corbyn is much given to introspection. And so it feels like it may take a while to get better, but I'm not sure we fix it by putting a new rule on the internet, even if we do find Mark Zuckerberg very annoying.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And we always love hearing from listeners who say, we disagree with everything you say on Coffee House Shots, but still listen to it. So if you have any friends who you think would disagree with us on everything, still do introduce them to Coffee House Shots to break out the echo chamber. Thanks for listening and join us again on Monday.